Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
Music. Dun, dun, dun. We're starting the show. Hey, everybody. My name is Jimmy Wong, and are listening to the Command Zone. Ooh, yes.
Oh, crap. How's it? It's Josh Lee Quiet. It's like the second or third time we've done this, so we're not very good at it yet.
Josh, this is actually a solo show, so you're not.
Oh, sorry.
It's just me.
I got fired?
Could you imagine if I had to do a show for 60 minutes by myself?
You know, Marshall, Unlimited Resources, there's one episode.
Oh, right.
Where it was supposed to be the first John Laux episode, and Laux, like, didn't show up or something, and Marshall had to do that episode by himself. And I'd never listened to it, but recently Marshall mentioned it in one of his episodes, and I was like, you know, because we've been doing the podcast, mm-hmm. I was like, I need to go listen to that, because that would be so hard to do.
I would just be intimidated. Any blank space, you're like, and... onto the next
There's nobody
topic.
To pick him up at any time, or to move him on, or to like quip in or anything. And it's very interesting being a podcaster now, listening to him do that and just like thinking like, man, that is so tough to do.
Well, big cool. Props to doing that. We plan to never do that with the show. In fact, we plan on welcoming as many guests as we can.
Jimmy, if you're not here, I won't do the show by myself. There just won't be a show that week.
It would just end up by the end, you're just talking about something completely not magic related. It's like you're stranded in a desert. You've just gone insane. But we do have a guest on today. We are going to be talking about Commander Statistics with the creator of EDHREC.com. If any of you guys are Reddit users, you've definitely seen this bot pop up and around, and we're going to be talking a lot more about that. But before that all gets started, we have a surprise
giveaway. This is our first surprise giveaway. We always premeditate them.
You'd think we would do more surprises in general.
Yeah, because we're all about surprises, but, well, this may set a trend. We may start doing surprise giveaways.
We cast an instant surprise prize giveaway. it's one of those that costs nothing, and the upkeep is you have to pay the postage to send the prize out.
So we are going to give a prize away to a random iTunes reviewer.
Ooh, nice.
So we're going to give a prize to Gerdsman73.
Gerdsman73, congratulations. You didn't even know you entered to win the prize, but you just won one.
So Gerdsman, you need to email us at commandcast@rocketjump.com. We just grabbed a couple of random boosters. We're going to throw them in the mail as soon as we know where to send it.
Yeah, and Gerdsman was an iTunes reviewer, so he went on iTunes and left us a review, which you guys can do as well. We're not saying you're going to potentially win a prize.
You could potentially win a prize.
That's right, you could potentially. We have to keep it as vague as possible. yes, and by the way, by the time you guys are hearing this episode, Magic Origins is going to be fully spoiled, so we're going to have a full review of that next week. If you guys missed our spoiler episode last week, very exciting. We got to spoil a card called The Great Aurora. It was super sweet, and we talked about all five of the legendary Planeswalkers and their viability in the 99 or as a commander of your EDH deck.
And don't worry, we are going to do a full Magic Origins set review.
Yeah.
Well, not a full set review. We won't review every card.
Oh my gosh, we'll leave that to Marshall.
Yeah, but we will do an EDH set review, so just the EDH viable cards, but that'll come out next week.
And I look forward to these episodes probably the most.
Yeah, they are super fun to do. They're very popular, and
they're hard on my wallet.
It sort of makes you, as a player, go through each card and think about them.
Yeah, and I always miss stuff too, which is great because, you know, you guys, the viewers, tweet at us or comment on the YouTube site or on Rocket Jump and tell us stuff, and that's always great to hear as well.
Yeah, it's great to sort of get the brain trust, which is all our listeners, on it. So it's like we give our initial impressions, but we're basically seeing the cards, you know, not for the very first time, all of them, but we haven't thought about it a ton, and so... You know, there's a whole bunch of interactions people always throw at us where you're like, oh, yeah, I didn't think of that.
Or just like, yeah, totally. Yeah, totally thought of that. Just decided not to say it. Which is great, though. The brain trust, I like the term for that, which is our collective audience base, which has a vast amount of EDH knowledge amongst them all, which is great.
I was going to say hive mind, but a lot of people don't like that card, so I didn't want to. I don't want to.
It reminds me of the Zerg a little bit, so which is not Magic the Gathering at all. Anyway, those are our announcements. That's the upkeep set. We're going to move on to our main topic, super Swift here, guys. We are talking Commander Statistics with the creator of EDHREC.com. Thank you so much for being on the show, Donald Miner.
Thanks, guys. I'm really happy to be here and talk about some of this data.
Yes.
So I really want to talk about like how blown my mind is right now about Origins. Like before we talk about it, what we're supposed to be talking about, I'm just like, I can't even like handle myself right now. But yeah. Anyways,
It does seem like Origins is more geared toward EDH than maybe any set since we started the show for sure.
I think it's more EDH than the Commander product.
Yeah, that's
interesting. That, it could be.
It could be. Well, I mean, I just love what Wizards has done in general because they know, I mean, like it's a big set, so they're allowed to put some crazy cards at Mythic that don't necessarily have to affect Standard or whatever.
And it's going to be hard for me too because people are going to be making a ton of decks. They're going to be trying all kinds of new cards. Flip cards are really hard for me to handle technology-wise. So
interesting.
Yeah. They're really going to stick it to you then, Don.
Yep.
Well, for those people that don't know, do you want to explain what EDHREC.com is?
Sure. So EDHREC basically stands for EDH Recommendations. It's pretty clever of a name. it basically what it does is it takes a look at commander deck lists and from all over the place, different people, different places, and puts all this data into one place, and then you can plug in your deck so you can find out different information about different commanders or your deck. And it basically provides you a way to look at different cards. So unfortunately for me as an engineer, there's 15,000 unique Magic cards about.
Yeah, this game's been around for a while, hasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. So it basically provides a tool for slogging through all this data and figuring out what cards you should be playing.
That's really cool.
It's super cool. If you haven't visited the site, you can do things like put in a color combination, and then it'll tell you sort of percentage-wise what the most played commanders in those colors are. And then you can click on one of those commanders, and you can see what the most played cards in those decks are. You know, Don, where does all the data come from? Like, where do you get the deck list and everything?
Yeah, so when I first started, it was only a Reddit bot before it was a website as well. And when it first started, what it did was it looked for tapped out links in Reddit posts. And then I would go scrape the tapped out website, scraping in a very bad way. Like I hit the website 3 times to do different things and
essentially like slightly DDoSing it.
Yeah,
give you some traffic.
I most definitely was. And tapped out banned me. They banned my IP at one point. And I had to email
you just
the
hit
guy.
Him too often.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, so, what is this guy doing mining all this information? It's useless, right?
Yep. So I contacted them and we ended up working out an arrangement where we tapped out deck stats and a couple of other sources. I actually have agreements with the webmasters where they provide me a standard way for me to pull data from their website once a request is made. But I only pull decks that are instigated by somebody trying to get recommendations from a deck. So when you go to the website and plug in a deck, I basically go take that deck and then I store it. And then it's there forever. So that's basically where the decks come from. And I've got 24,000 decks as of today.
So there's more decks than cards in Magic, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So you've got 24,000 decks. And I've been in business per se for a year. That's about 65 decks per day.
Wow.
And that's a grand total of about 2.4 million cards, right? Because each of those decks has 100 cards.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not all necessarily unique, but yeah, that's amazing. So you have a giant database of data and it filters all into EDHREC, correct?
Yep. Yep. So it's actually, in terms of what I do for my day job, it's not that much data, but it is a decent amount. But I have it implemented in a way that it's basically, when you're plugging in a recommendation, it's pretty much slogging through just about every other deck that exists of those 24,000 decks to pull out the recommendations.
Wow. And what is your day job, by the way, if you don't mind?
Yeah. So I do data analysis for like large, large Fortune 50 companies. So mostly I'm doing boring things like detecting fraud or I don't know.
There's not much fraud in EDH deck analysis.
Yeah, no.
No one's putting up like fake.
There's a lot
decks.
Of fraud in EDH play, though.
Yeah. As in like people forgetting how a card works.
So actually, a lot of the stuff I do in EDHREC is like standard techniques that I use every day at work. Particularly uses the same algorithms that are used for recommendation engines on websites like Amazon, for example. So a lot of the same techniques that I use for recommending EDH cards are used in Amazon or other stores, things like that, which it actually surprisingly worked very well. I was actually kind of surprised it worked one of the first time I ran it.
That's really cool. Now, I'm assuming because you took the time to do this website and everything on your own, that you're a big EDH player. About how many EDH decks do you have, Don?
24,000. He has all of them.
So, I play EDH a lot. I only have four decks. And I think the reason for that is I'm a bit of a perfectionist. So I get kind of frustrated when I can't put Mana Crypt in all of my decks.
Join the club.
Yeah, I get frustrated too, except for that I don't actually own one.
Yeah, so actually you can avoid that entirely.
No, I'm just always frustrated.
Especially when it gets played against you, you're like, yeah, I could have been.
I'm actually being a bit smart, but I only have two Mana Crypts. Yeah.
Do you actually take them out physically and put them in the other decks?
Do you
proxy?
No,
what do you do?
No, I just deal with it, and my other two decks don't have Mana.
That's how I do it too. I'm not a big switch out. It just takes too long.
It's just too much time. Yeah. Exactly.
So I just got to keep buying those dual lands and
yeah, slowly increase the power creep of your deck. Slowly goes up over time.
Yeah, and also I stick with the same decks for a long time. So the main deck that I've been playing, which is a 5-color Enchantress deck, I've been playing since Shards of Alara. So I stick with the same deck for usually about a year. I kind of really narrow in on one. So I'm definitely more of a low number of decks, but I play the same deck a lot.
Right.
Yeah. Now, I'm assuming you use your website to tune those decks to, the degree
absolutely. And I can cheat also, because if I want to answer a question that the website doesn't answer, I can just go like manually query the data.
You are like the most elite like beta user of your website, where you get to test out all the new features because you're the one coming up with them.
That's pretty great.
I imagine this must be a pretty busy time for you. How does it work when you have a new set coming in, like Origins? Do you have to wait until the set, like can you start doing it from spoilers? Or
there's a couple of problems with new sets. So the first one is that for one of the new sets, I think it was like M14. I tried adding cards as they were getting spoiled, and this ended up screwing up things, because like people that create decks early, they may pick a commander, let's say, that was spoiled early, but won't use the cards that have been spoiled in the deck.
So you get like a weird statistical bias.
Yeah. So what I decided to do was just basically, I usually wait about a week after the set has been completely released, which stops a lot of the influx of like brand new decks, people just brewing just out of just out of nowhere. Right. And so I wait about a week, and then I do this bulk import of the card data, basically. And then that's actually a pretty easy process, but it is manual, but it takes only about like 20 minutes. And then so the big problem is new problems that appear in every set. There's something weird that happens. So one common thing. So, for example, the one that's going to really mess me up here is two-faced commanders here. So I'm going to have to. We'll see how this one ends up.
Some new lines of code, I'm guessing.
Yeah. And then every now and then there's like a card that has a special character in it that hasn't been there before that messes me up. So so usually it's I push the data live, but then I'm always kind of nervous for about a day or two to see if something breaks. But other than that, it's not that bad. Gatherer gets updated pretty fast, so I pull the data from that. So it's really not that big of a deal.
Interesting. Well, yeah, Wizards definitely tries to get it up on Gatherer very quickly now. It's definitely one of their priorities.
Yeah, there's so many websites dealing with it that it's just, to have one central hub where you can go. How long does it take? I mean, I'm assuming when a new set comes out, there's a big influx of decks based on the new cards.
Right. Like, I can see a lot of decks being based on these new commanders.
Yeah. Do you have any numbers as far as, like, how many new decks come out, like, in the early part, like, in the next couple of weeks, basically?
Right. Out of the 65 a day.
Yeah.
Yep. So it definitely spikes. And it's been weird because I actually tried running these stats before, and I wasn't able to get, like, a good answer, because one of the problems is that every set seems to have a different commander strength to it, I guess is the best way to say. So, right. like, some sets are, so for example, the Khan sets have been very commander heavy. You know, there's a lot of legendary creatures. So there's been a lot of deck brewing going on. So I definitely saw some things there. But for example, when M14 came out, it was like pretty timid. So I guess it kind of depends. But yeah, I'll see a spike of maybe 10 to 15x number of decks than what I usually see that kind of first week.
Oh, wow. 10 times more than normal. Wow, that's a lot. What do you know what the average amount of decks you're adding every week is?
It's right now it's about, it comes out to about like, about 500, 400.
About 400 a week. So you're going to see 4,000 new decks potentially in the next few weeks.
Holy moly.
So that's an overall, no, it's not going to be 4,000. It's really like 10 times as much maybe in the first couple days, maybe. So I'll probably see like maybe 500 or so decks. The other data source that I didn't mention earlier as well is I scrape all of MTG Salvation as well. So any deck list that gets posted in MTG Salvation, I'm also pulling as well. So that forum also gets a lot of influx of commander decks when they come out as well.
Basically, you're scraping like every popular EDH site. I mean, those are the top ones that you've named. So
yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if you capture the majority of decklist posts online, because these are the biggest websites that they usually go to. I mean, I don't see too many people just posting random lists in random places unless it's a big forum or whatever.
Yeah. Well, unless they're emailing them to us.
Yeah.
well, actually, that's an interesting point. So one of the things, so I have 24,000 decks, but that's only the ones I keep. I actually delete a number of decks. So if somebody plays an illegal card in a deck, let's say they play like a hybrid mana symbol in a deck they shouldn't be playing, I actually delete the deck because it's almost like a sign of incompetence from the user. so I don't want to have like...
You have quality control.
Those are outliers.
Right. Or so if somebody plays like an illegal commander, or they play like a card they shouldn't be playing, or...
Primeval Titan or something.
Yeah, exactly. So I actually prune a lot of the decks as well.
Interesting. Well, here's a question we had written down. A really interesting one. Is there a bias that you've seen towards like cheaper cards versus like better cards that are more expensive? Like, how realistic are the deck lists?
Very realistic. Actually, this is a big problem because, it's like a first world Magic the Gathering problem for me. But like, for example, I mean, I'm not going to lie. I was kind of joking about the Mana Crypts, but like, and I actually really enjoyed your two most recent podcasts here.
The High Rollers.
Oh, High Rolling, yeah.
So like, for example, finding recommendations for like really high end decks is actually kind of, the recommendations aren't as good because not everybody's playing Moat, right? So let's say that I did have like $1,000 to spend on my EDH deck and I was doing recommendations. There's not many people playing Moat, so Moat doesn't show up probably when it should if you weren't thinking about cost. So there's definitely
a because a lot of deck lists that are posted, they would put Moat in there, but they just know they can't have it. Does it do the same thing with the dual lands?
Yep, absolutely. Well, dual lands, actually, there are a lot of dual lands in the EDH decks. I think, I don't know. I just see them a lot. They're not necessarily as big of a problem as I would say, like Moat, Tabernacle, things like that.
Just the big money spender cards.
But the one interesting thing that does happen, though, is that the recommendation engine, it doesn't really like look at the card itself. Like, it doesn't know that Elvish Mystic is the same thing as Llanowar Elves, for example. All it knows is that these decks were played together, or the cards were played together. So one thing that interesting happens is if you put like Tabernacle and Moat and like Grim Tutor in a deck, it'll recommend other really expensive cards because the same people that are playing those cards are playing the other really expensive cards.
Gotcha. So they're interesting. In that
so that's
upper...
a way to find those cards, but you just sort of have to trick it almost.
Yeah, exactly. So like five color decks, for example, if you put in a deck list with like 10, the 10 original dual lands in it, you'll get like a much less budget version of recommendations than if you were playing like Gilgates.
Interesting. That's really interesting to know.
Because it's correlating what those other cards are being played with. So if you put in four Guild Gates, it's saying, oh, well, the decks with four Guild Gates are budget decks, so I'm not going to... Yeah, that's cool. That's really cool. Well, let's just dive into the stats here. I think there's a lot of interesting stuff that people will be interested to hear.
Josh and I are going to try and guess some of the answers to these questions.
This is going
to
be tough.
Yeah, okay. It is going to be tough. And also, just before we dive in, it's important to note that there are a lot of decks that exist outside of the internet.
Yep.
Because not everyone is necessarily going to Tap Down Sub posting all this stuff. Yep. But I don't know how much variance we're going to get off of that, but I feel like these statistics are going to be pretty good.
I would assume, yeah, he's got so much data. Go ahead.
I think there, in my opinion, I mean, it's hard for me to tell. I definitely think there is a bias towards the deck list that I have versus the deck list that I see when I go to my local game store. Mm-hmm. So, for example, the most common commanders, I won't spoil it for you yet, but I don't really see them that often in the wild, to be honest. Like,
interesting.
I mean, I see them probably more often than I see other decks, but it's not like I'm seeing them in every pod, you know? So,
right, or as heavily as it's favored in the statistics.
Yeah. And also, too, the other thing, too, is that I believe that a lot of my users are MTGO users. Which is, I think, like the decks that people are building for MTGO versus like decks that I'm playing in person. There's also some bias and change in there as well. So I think there's a lot of variation too, based on the fact that I think there's more MTGO users brewing right now.
Yeah, I think it's easier to brew an MTGO as well because you can have one copy of a card across all your decks instead of having five mana crypts or whatever.
It would also, I mean, I don't know if this is true, but my instinct would be that they would be a little bit more spiky. Mm-hmm. A little bit more tuned up on
it's MTGO. Easier to tune on MTGO
and
as well.
It's easier to just sort of do mean things and not worry about repercussions.
Yeah,
so sure. You know, so it seems like it would be anyway.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's dive in here. We're gonna start with, what are the most popular commanders? Should we just do the top five?
Yeah, okay. But we're just gonna guess one each. You go first, Josh.
Well, I have dabbled lately in a little bit of data collection because we've been doing the Deck Doctors series.
Right.
And so I've been actually writing down and keeping track of the submissions and just what commander they are.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to guess we have three that are our top right now. It's Narset, Mimeoplasm, and crap, I'm forgetting the third one. But I'm going to say... Well, let me ask you something, Don, really quick before I answer.
Oh, geez. Just you're mining as much information as possible here.
Is the data biased towards commanders that have been around for longer? Because that seems like it would be like, this commander's just existed for longer, so it would have more decks.
It is biased, yes.
Okay. Then I am going to say Mimeoplasm.
I'm going to say Caridor, Ghost, Chieftain.
Okay. So Mimeoplasm is at 11?
Wow.
And Caridor is at 2.
Yes! A round of applause for Jay Wong.
Our listeners are not representative of that.
So actually, the one interesting thing that I've noticed, because I visit the Reddit subreddit for EDH, and I visit MTG Salvation a lot. Mm-hmm. One thing I'll notice is that for some reason they come in waves. So... Uh-huh. Somebody will talk about like Mimeoplasm or have a new primer that comes out, and then you'll see like five or six deck lists that follow like within the next couple days.
Yeah, so it literally like prompts inspiration in other people.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
Well, wait. So what's 1, 3, 4, and 5?
Yep. So number one is Alloro.
Alloro, Ageless Ascetic.
People love Life Gain, don't they?
Well, that card is so ridiculous.
And Alloro and Caridor are actually not that far. They're only 30 decks away from each other. So in 24,000 decks, that's really not that far off. Mm-hmm. The next one is Animar is 3. Riku is 4. Kalia is 5. Gave, Prosh, Derevi. And then all the way at 9 is Narset. Do you guys notice anything interesting about that?
It's a lot of the precons.
Yeah. So Narset.
It's all precons.
Yep.
Yeah. Narset's the top non-precon.
Yep. Narset is the top non-precon, which also is interesting because it's also relatively new. Mm-hmm. So
the power level of Narset is way up there.
It's super dumb. Yeah.
I think Narset's the most broken.
Yeah. I had a Narset deck for like one day, and then I said, "This is done."
It's just too broken. Well, yeah, it's interesting because I mean, obviously, the data we have from Deck Doctors is like a fraction of what you've got, but Narset is tied for first in ours.
Yeah.
Oh, really? I think
ours is not biased towards things that commanders that have been around for longer.
The other thing that I think too is because a lot of the deck lists I get, especially when the commander products come out, are minorly tweaked precon decks because I think that's when a lot of people are looking for help. So I think there's also a bias towards the precons just naturally, other than the fact that they're good commanders.
That's a good point, because if somebody's brewing with a non-precon commander, then they're already swimming in the deep end a little bit. So they're already a good swimmer.
Yeah.
So they might not be asking for help.
Yeah. So I think even the more interesting question, other than like, what are the top non-precons? And I think, and so they're at 9 is Narset, 10 is Mael, 12 is Thrax, Thraxmundur, 24 is Rafiq, and then we got Shroom, Melek, Sidisi, and Riz. So
24 is Rafiq. I thought Rafiq would be way up there.
Or I'm sorry, 14 is Rafiq.
Oh, 14? Okay. Yep. Yeah, but even then I thought he would break top 10.
Yeah.
I think Voltron is a very popular strategy, but maybe I'm just wrong.
14 is pretty high.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
It ain't no Caridor. It's interesting too because Aloro came out in a more recent commander set, whereas Caridor has been around from the original commander set.
But yeah. Life Gain, if you're a new player, new players are so drawn to Life Gain. And Aloro is also good.
Yeah.
So if you're not a new player, you'll still brew with Aloro, but a new player is just going to naturally gravitate towards that.
Mm-hmm.
And a new player is going to be more likely to ask for recommendations also. So I can see how those two things would like add up to it being number one.
Yeah, definitely.
But Narset is definitely the fastest growing that I've ever seen. I was watching that thing. That thing skyrocketed. It was fun to watch.
Interesting.
It's raw power. I mean, just the most powerful thing.
It's super easy to build too, to be honest. Yeah.
All right. Well, let's go to the next one. We're going to go for what are the least popular commanders.
Ooh,
Jimmy, stop cheating.
I'm not trying to cheat.
He's like clicking around
these
the
numbers.
Website.
I was just trying to see the thingies.
So let me just stop you guys on this one because the question's a little bit weird. The answers are weird. So there's, I went through, there's about 60 legendary creatures in Magic that I do not have any deck lists for.
Okay.
So there's 60 commanders that are the worst or the least used commander. So
just because they're old or just
So I have two examples that I picked out that I thought were kind of fun. So there was this one called, I've never even heard of these cards before. There's one called Rashida Scalebane. Do you want to take a guess what this person does?
Scalebane, does something to toughness of a creature.
What else has scales?
Dragons.
Dragons. Okay.
Dragons.
So this creature has the wonderful ability that it costs 2 white and 3. And you can tap it to destroy target attacking or blocking dragon. It can't be regenerated. You gain life equal to its power.
Hey, right now, that's actually not too bad.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah, which is actually what we'll be talking about soon is tribal dragon.
That's fascinating. It's so specific. That's probably no one's like, I don't. Interesting.
The next one, I mean, there's a ton of these are the vanilla legends from the legend set.
Right.
But one that I pulled out because it kind of reminded me of a conversation you had in your previous podcast, which was Gosta Dirk, which is cost 7 total mana, 2 white, 2 blue, 3. It's a legendary human warrior. It has first strike, and it's I didn't write down the power toughness, but it's not very good. But the ability is creatures with island walk can be blocked as though they didn't have island walk.
Wow, that is set specific if I've ever heard of a card that's set specific.
Which completely hoses your guys' recommendation to use Island Sanctuary instead of Moat.
Oh yeah, that's so
funny.
No,
it's awesome actually because you use Island Sanctuary and that card, now you can actually block the island walk guys, so only flying hits you.
Yeah.
Turns Island Sanctuary into exactly Moat.
Doesn't Rexxeal of the Hidden Deep have Island Walk as well?
He has Swamp Walk also.
I'm putting you on the spot a little bit because we did have to give you these questions beforehand so you could get the data, but could we do the least popular pre-con commanders? Because we know you'll have those in there.
I'm pretty sure it's that white guy.
The Jizal?
Jizal, yes. The Goldmane? Or Kemba Ka Regent. I could see a lot of people doing Kemba.
So let me see. No, well, Kemba was in a precon. It was the guy that pumps tokens, I think.
It's Jizal. Yeah.
That's right.
Jizal Goldman.
Yeah. I think he only has
a Johnny's brother, cousin, uncle, or something like that.
So he has 17 decks, 17 cards. 17 decks.
Uh-huh.
And I'm pretty sure that's
are the
lowest.
Bottom five probably all monocolored?
That's what I was guessing would be monocolored.
From a pre-con perspective,
yeah.
It was mostly the secondary ones, like they weren't very popular.
Yeah, like, well, the Planeswalker, they would have enough because
people are just trying to brew with those.
It's just something they've never done before, so it's like, oh, I can have a Planeswalker, so I'm going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But I could see some of those secondary ones being.
So for the secondary ones of the monocolor ones, I think Titania did the best, and then Felden, and then the black one, blue one, then the white one.
of the not of the secondary
of the secondary
ones.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Felden's pretty sweet.
All right, so let's go to what is the most popular color. Oof. And then the least popular. So go ahead, Jimmy, you can guess what's most popular and what's least.
Blue is the most popular color. Okay. No, no. Green is the most popular color.
It's not. It's a good guess. Okay. And what do you think is the least?
Red.
I'm going to say blue, most popular. Red's white.
Oh, yeah, white was my other go for it.
All right.
How'd we do?
So there's we're talking about the color of the cards, not the color identity, right? Combinations?
Correct.
Okay.
Just the raw amount of cards. No. Yeah.
Yep. So there are the most popular is blue and the least popular is red. So it goes blue, green, black, white, red.
Josh. Yep. Blue, green, white, black, red.
Yep. No. Blue, green, black. Yeah. Blue, green, black, white, red.
Black.
And there's almost not quite double, but pretty close. I would say like half, three quarters of the way to double of blue cards versus red cards. So it's a pretty big gap.
Yeah.
So blue's almost twice as popular as the least popular color, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yep. And blue and green are pretty close. Blue is 412,000 cards. Green was 404,000 cards.
Oh, very close.
And then black is 380,000, which is still close. And then it drops down to white, which is at 350, and then red is 270.
Oh, poor red.
Poor red. Sorry, Jimmy.
Poor red.
I know, my spirit color is. It makes spirit sense, color. Though. I mean, red, as we talked, we recorded a color wheel episode for red, and it just is not the best fit for a multiplayer.
Well, it's also a damage-based color in it, so everything about red is balanced for 20 life.
Yeah, it just doesn't scale.
So it doesn't scale great.
So the other thing, too, that I found interesting, and I'm kind of jumping ahead on some stats I collected for something else, which is the most popular cards for each color.
Uh-huh.
When you look at red, almost all the most popular cards that are played in red decks are artifacts.
Makes sense.
So I think red decks, like mono red decks, for example, are just not playing that many red cards.
Right. So that they just immediately lose out on that.
Yep.
And also, part of the statistic when mono red has Duretti now, which is a big artifact color.
Yeah.
So, but
and Felden too.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Well, let's talk about the most popular 2 and 3 color combination. Yeah. So, what do you think the most popular guild from Ravnica is?
I would believe the most popular guild, it's tough because I just don't know that. I'm gonna say green white Selesnya.
Okay,
because
it's a good
tokens.
One because tokens. Yeah. I'm gonna say Simic green blue.
All right, the most popular 2-color combination is blue white.
Blue white,
really?
Yep,
wow.
And then black
Azorius.
Blue. Yep,
Braga,
and then who black else? Blue after mm-hmm. that, and then green white, and then blue red.
Well, you were way ahead of me.
And then black green, and then blue, and then blue green, and black red, and then black white, and then red white is then red white and the worst or the lowest used. I need to stop saying worst because it's not necessarily bad. It's just
that's right.
Used.
Yeah, it's just least used.
Yeah,
is green red.
Green red. Okay, interesting. But red white makes sense to not be down there. Our friend is compiling. He has all of the 2-color combination decks except for 2, and red white is the one he's like, I just don't know what commander I want to do.
It's hard.
For
there's
this.
Not good commanders there.
Yeah.
I tried making red white work a couple times, and I just can't do it. It's too hard.
We talk about all the time on the show that EDH is so much about card draw and mana ramp, and those are the 2 colors that don't do either of those things. So it's like you don't have neither of those colors covers the other one in either of those areas. Mm-hmm. So all right, let's talk about the 3-color combinations.
Ooh.
What do you think is the
most popular 3-color combination? I am going to say it is green, blue, red, and the Mars colors.
Teemer,
yeah.
I'm going to say Bant.
Ooh, that's a good one, too.
Ooh, that's a good one. So, in general, the original allied color, 3 colors, are pretty much more popular than, than not. So,
just because they've been those cards
the shards,
been around
you mean?
For longer. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yeah. So the shards are a little bit more popular than the enemy colored ones. Mm-hmm. So our good friend Aloro is bringing in black, blue, white into first.
Aloro,
so
single-handedly.
Yep, Esper is first. And then Grixis is next, not that far behind.
Blue, black, red.
Yep, and then Bant is a good step behind that. And then you've got blue, green, red. So blue, green, red is the most popular enemy-colored one.
Nice.
But only fourth in in three color decks.
Interesting.
And then you get black, green, white after that.
You know, going through EDH Rec and clicking on it, it's true because the shards just have many more command, yep. almost twice as many commanders to be played. So it makes a lot of sense that because yep. they've been around longer.
Yep. Do you guys want to guess what the least used three color combo is?
Abzan.
No, I'm going to say red, white, black.
Yep.
Kalia's
yep.
colors.
Mardu?
Yeah, Mardu.
Yep.
Just because it has red, white.
Yep, just because it has red, white. So you can tutor into your awful red, white cards.
Ugh.
So you can tutor into your offer.
I'm guessing Kali is just the all-star of that category. Yeah.
Yeah. She accounts for about a third of the decks in that color combo.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense.
All right, let's talk about the top five most played cards.
There's one interesting thing I found.
Oh, sure.
So I also compiled how popular the color combinations are against each other, not only in the three colors and the two colors. So one thing interesting I found was that mono black decks are more popular than mono blue decks.
Really?
But there are more blue cards played than black cards.
So if you play blue, you're probably combining it with another color.
Yep.
Well, that makes sense because of the color wheel. Red, mm-hmm. or sorry, black is very prejudiced against the other colors. Black rewards you the most for not going outside of your color. So that does make sense.
Yep. And then, I play a mono black deck right now too. And, you know, it's fantastic.
Oh, who's the commander? I'm building one.
Sidisi.
Oh, nice. That's pretty good. Yeah.
It's super dumb. I basically just like a McKay Estrascali in every game. It's pretty stupid.
Very nice.
Red is actually the third most popular mono color deck. Green mm-hmm. and then white is last.
White's last. Yeah, it makes sense.
White just doesn't have it. It's not as fun, I think. Yeah. I think red has a lot more options just because you have Kiki Jiki, and I feel like that stands for a decent number.
Yep. So
and Krenko.
And also too, the there's a lot of five color decks. So mono black is the most popular color identity, and then five color is the next one.
Mono black is the top of the top as far as any. Wow. And then five colors next.
Yep.
That's interesting that it's a mono color deck and then it's five color.
I was actually really surprised when I saw it too.
That does make sense though, because it's almost like the three color combinations, they take away from each other. Because if you're going to go three color, mm-hmm. you have 10 choices, right? So.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Interesting.
All right. So we may move on now.
Okay. Excellent. let's do top five most played cards. I feel like this should be a pretty easy gimme. Sol Ring?
I gotta say Sol Ring, yeah. Let's say it wasn't Sol Ring. What's after that?
Okay. Oh, geez. Basic Island. I'm just kidding. That doesn't count. Let me think here.
It's way tougher after Sol Ring.
I know,
So are we not counting Basic Lands?
Yeah, let's not count Basic Lands.
Well, let's get Basic Lands, because I guess it would probably go in the same order.
So Island is at three.
Oh. Would Swamp be at two then?
Okay, I didn't actually notice this before. This is blowing my mind right now. So Island is number one. Swamp is number two. Plains is number three. Forest is number four. And Mountain is number five.
Wow, because Plains is the last monocolored, but it must be played so much in the two and three. Well, we know Esper is number one.
Yeah, and Aloro is up there. Yeah.
So
I don't know what's going on. But there is a card at number two that's not a basic land. And it's pretty obvious.
Sol Ring.
Sol Ring?
Oh, no. Sol Ring's number one?
Yep, Sol Ring's number one.
Okay, so then number two is pretty obvious. Go ahead. He's saying it's obvious, and now it's... I'm
still needs to be an artifact.
It has to be able to be played. Yeah,
it's not an artifact.
What? Okay.
It's a land.
Oh.
It's
Command Tower.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay, let's say non-land.
I'm going to go with... Darksteel Ingot.
Nope. Darksteel Ingot. I'm going to go with... crap. I'm going to go with...
oh, you know, I should have said something else, I think. But
I'm going to go with Nev's Disc.
I was going to say Swiftfoot Boots, actually. Might be better. Yeah, equipment.
Close. Lightning Greaves.
Lightning Greaves. Okay,
yep. So the top non-land cards are obviously Sol Ring. Lightning Greaves is next, far behind. Solemn Simulacrum is the next one.
Uh-oh. Mm-hmm. I should have said that. That was my number one artifact.
So then Swiftfoot Boots, and then we have the first colored card. Do you want to guess what the first...
First colored card, okay.
It's going to be
Demonic
Blue.
Tutor.
Nope.
Counterspell.
Nope.
Oh, Cyclonic Rift?
Cyclonic Rift.
Yes!
Oh, nice!
Awesome.
Yep.
Sweet.
So in the top cards here, we have Cyclonic Rift, Eternal Witness, Swords of Plowshares are the only colored cards that I have on this list.
What number is Cyclonic Rift? Counting lands and everything.
So Cyclonic Rift, including the basic lands, is 15.
Oh. 15.
So it's 10 without the basic lands.
It's funny because we haven't done top 10 blue cards in EDH yet. I feel like we're getting a leg up here in saying that Cyclonic Rift is going to make it pretty high on my list.
Oh, yeah. It was already going to be, it was already probably going to be number one. We might have to do the Outlaw thing, although blue has a lot of good cards.
Yeah, blue's got plenty of
cards. And again, there's a, well, we have a dollar bias too when we do the list.
Do you guys want to guess which one's more popular, Evolving Wilds or Terramorphic Expanse?
Evolving Wilds.
Yeah, I was going to say Evolving Wilds, too.
I
think it's just because it's been printed more.
I feel like it has been, yeah.
Well, I think it's also been printed more recently.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, there's just a lot of copies now.
Yep. But it's a pretty big difference.
Interesting. Okay, most popular tribes.
I mean, dragons.
Yeah, I would say dragons followed by goblins. Maybe goblins first,
say,
actually.
I'm
going to
say
goblins.
Elves.
Elves? Okay.
All right. So it's elves is the answer. But when I was looking at elf decks, I'm kind of concerned.
Soldiers would have been a good one.
Yeah.
So the problem with elf decks is that when I was looking through the elf tribal decks, there's a lot of elf decks that look like elf tribal that I don't think are elf tribal, like in spirit, if that makes sense. Like for example, I found there's a Progenitus deck. So one of my users asked me because if you go to the website, it'll tell you what like popular commanders are for the tribe.
Mm-hmm. And Progenitus shows
Progenitus shows up twice. And so, and my users are like, oh dude, there's a bug. So I go look, and it was a freaking five color Progenitus like elf deck where the elves like ramped into Progenitus, and then. Like, so is that an elf?
That makes sense because elves will create mana of every color.
So, is it an elf deck? I mean, I don't think they were trying to like overrun with elves, or they were trying to kill with elves, or do stuff with elves. It was mostly just like ramping into Progenitus. So I think elves might. It's classified as number one, but I think it cheated a little bit. The next one down, which is most definitely the winner, is zombies.
Oh, we forgot about zombies.
Dragon,
mono black.
Yeah.
Yep. Dragons are only four decks behind zombies, so it's super close. And then dragons are after zombies, just four behind. Then goblins, then slivers.
Slivers.
Slivers are super popular in our deck doctoring thing.
Yeah.
I put all the slivers decks together, and I think they were in like fifth or sixth place.
Hold on. How do you make a bad sliver deck? You just put
all the slivers in. I know. That's why we.
So with the new. The new indestructible sliver guy, I saw a huge, like, the number of sliver decks almost doubled. Because before that, Sliver Queen and Sliver Overlord were pretty inaccessible.
Right.
And so when the new one came out, I saw, like, a ton of decks come out.
And a lot of new slivers came out at that same time.
Yep.
So,
I took a little bit closer a dive at dragons because, and what I did was dragons is I plotted how many dragon decks I got every month. And because I obviously dragon decks became more popular recently. Uh-huh. And what I found was that right after Cons was, so this is really interesting, I think. Right after Cons was released, I got an influx of dragon decks. I got about 50.
Wait, after Cons, not after Dragons of Darkir?
After Cons.
Cons had a lot of dragons in it too.
No, Cons didn't have any.
That was
the whole storyline.
Yeah.
You're right. Ignore me.
People were getting ready?
Yeah. So I think what happened was people were getting ready for like the anticipation of dragons coming out. Because they were...
They announced the whole storyline.
Yeah.
I went to the Cons spoiler because I was like, this doesn't make any sense. Like, what's going on here? And it was just... I guess people were just speculating. But when Fate Reforged was released in January, I saw a huge influx of decks. And then when Dragons of Tarkir... So this was interesting. When Dragons of Tarkir came in, I did not see a huge influx. It was like increased, but it wasn't nearly as much as when Fate Reforged or Cons came out.
And that's because when Cons came out, like everybody had already brewed their dragon.
Yeah, I think everybody was burnt out on dragons after 9 months, I guess. Scion became like a very popular commander. It shot up in the rankings. Everybody was building a Scion deck it was number one in my weekly and monthly rankings for almost 3 or 4 months.
Wow. That makes a lot of sense. Scion, I think, definitely has the it's just like you get to have
it's
any
the spikiest
dragon.
Dragon for sure.
Yeah.
Well, we've talked about a lot of things. The website can obviously do a lot of like what's the most popular this or that. You know, we wanted to talk about some things that are beyond that. So what can the data tell us that's sort of above and beyond what's the most popular this or that? Mm-hmm. One thing you mentioned, Don, was that you can sort of tell like how many mana rocks on average does a deck have?
Yeah, so this one was fun. I had to go write some custom code for this one, and I'm actually going to keep it around and add this because I thought it was pretty interesting.
Nice.
And so what I did was I went through and calculated for each color combination how many mana rocks on average that color combination is playing. And the reason why I did it that way was because you guys also asked me, how does playing green affect the number of mana rocks?
Right.
Which I thought was also
the assumption is that would affect it a lot, but yes. We don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah, so colorless by far plays the most mana rocks. I don't know if that should be a surprise or not. So basically, like Karn and Ulamog and Kozilek are playing the most at an average of 8.3 mana rocks.
Okay,
which I thought was kind of low because I think when I built a Karn deck, I think I had like 20 mana rocks in it.
we usually advocate at least 10 mana ramp cards,
not necessarily rocks.
Yeah.
But,
yep. Yeah. So the next one that has the most mana rocks was black blue white, and you know our good old friend Alora, I guess.
That's interesting because it has black, which can ramp you.
Yeah, but black is very specific to swamps. To ramp usually. Like
that's true. And if you're in a three color.
Yeah, you're not going to be running.
Well, and that's also just because that's the most. Like, is it percentage of those? Oh, yeah, it's an average, right?
Yeah. So
it doesn't matter how many decks.
Yeah. So the weird thing is, I think it's actually kind of low. The average for black, blue, white, which is, again, the most mana rocks, is only 5.25.
What?
I think either A. Maybe my analysis was wrong, or B. I think people are not playing enough mana rocks. I think.
Yeah, I think actually that's 100% true.
Yeah.
As we see more of the community, we play with more different people from different walks of life and different playgroups and everything. That's one of the things I just consistently see.
Yeah.
I think is just not enough mana ramp in general.
I had a player ask me the other day. He was pretty new. He was asking me why I played Signets.
And you're like, they're awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people don't maybe realize how many mana rocks there are and aren't playing them. Maybe they because like so mana rocks. I think the other thing too, that's kind of interesting about mana rocks is that they're not fun to think about. So like,
right.
if I'm building like a blue black white, like Sphinx deck, let's say, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sitting there like thinking, oh man, I really wonder what mana rocks I'm going to play, you know, or if I'm leafing through my cards. You know, I may only pull out the mana rocks that I have. I'm not going to go to like the LGS and pick up like my three mana rocks that I'm missing. So
it's not a sexy part of the deck.
Yeah, for sure. Exactly. So I think maybe that's kind of my theory. But anyways, going into the greenness impact of mana rocks, the color combination that has green in it that plays the most mana rocks is black, green, red, and that plays on an average of 2.75. Which is half as many as
that's like a Soaring and a Gilded Lotus. Like, what's happening, guys?
Yeah, but that does make so it does correlate that green is using the least amount of mana rocks in general.
Yep. And then mono green is by far the least with 0.77, which
they don't need it.
Yeah, they don't even need a Soaring in there.
That translates, I think,
that's less than an average Soaring. You still run Soaring in mono green, everybody.
Yeah, yep, you just run Soaring no matter what, guys. Yep. Come on.
Yep, and then green white is at 1.4, which means that they're playing Sol Ring and maybe another card.
They're playing Sol Ring, and half of them are also playing Thrawn Dynamo or something.
That fascinates me because I feel like in green white with the popular commanders that are token generators, you need mana to pump stuff out with Risk the Redeemed and stuff.
Right. But your mana ramp is Earthcraft,
yeah,
and it's stuff like that, you know.
True.
And that's, I think that is generally good deck building is going through. You know, when I build a deck, I always pull every mana rock for those colors and put it there.
Yeah.
But then I also put, you know, other things like Earthcraft or
Exploration.
Yeah, or Cure's Follower or Fate Stitcher in the same row. And then I'm like, well, do I want this mana rock or do I want Fate Stitcher? I always want Fate Stitcher, you know, but that's sort of where you you take it out of that category, as it were.
Yeah. I think also people are brewing online. I think Mana Rocks, again, are just going to be the last thing they're putting in.
It's true. In a real-life deck, you might end up adding those Mana Rocks. That is really low, though. So the average deck, the average deck overall runs what?
I'm not sure. If I had to guess, it would probably be 3 or 4.
Wow. That seems really low. In fact,
blasphemy.
I don't know if I have a deck that doesn't have Sol Ring, Gilded Lotus, Thran Dynamo. Because they're all cheap, and they do. Mm-hmm. And
they also fit in the curve, like 4 and 5.
Even Titania has those three, and that's the one that would least need it for me.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Very interesting.
How much land does the average deck contain?
I'm going to guess 37.
I'm going to guess lower, because I think people are late. I'm going to guess 34.
Oh, my gosh.
33, even. I'm going to guess 34, though.
It's in between 36 and 37.
Okay, so it's right around that edge.
Oh, people run a lot.
Yep.
They should cut one land for 2 Mana Rocks.
The math doesn't add up there.
No, it doesn't. Yeah, I don't think it does.
Oh, so that's good.
I kind of dug around to find like some outliers, I guess. There, Azusa and I'm going to butcher this one, Aboberigmus, right? He plays 49 lands.
That makes sense.
Right.
Some of the, like,
what about Ashling? Ashling's got to play the most land.
Yeah, like 90 lands.
Ashling plays an average of 39.
What?
And this is an average, so like you kind of have to be careful of that, because a lot of people don't play Ashling with like 90 lands. Some people play with it with a normal amount of land. So I think some people are playing it with 36. If I had to plot it, you'd probably see like a spike around, you know, 36, 37, and then you'd see a few guys out there playing 99.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
But then again, like if you had a 99 Mountain Ashling deck, I don't know why you would play that into EDH Rec.
Yeah, it would just be, it's like, oh, cool.
That's a good point. You're not asking for recommendations. Hey, guys, what should I do with this deck? Take out some mountains, put in some other stuff?
Yeah.
So Azusa was the most amount of lands played, or Borborygmus was?
Borborygmus was at 49.
Yeah, that makes sense, just because that's his tied directly to his ability.
Yep, yeah, that's what he does.
Yeah. Your lands are doing damage to people.
Yeah, and so a lot of those lands may not even tap for mana necessarily. They could just be specific utility lands or whatever.
So you brought up an interesting statistic we didn't even think about asking, but this is, I'm really interested to find this out. It's what's the most popular day of the week for brewing? So on what day of the week do you get the most influx of decks? Oh, this is really interesting. I'm going to say
it's got to be a weekend. But at the same time, people want to play their EDH decks at FNM, correct?
Yeah, so my thought is you go to FNM and then the next day, so it's either Saturday or I would say Monday. Monday would be like you're at work and you're thinking school, about Magic from the weekend. Yeah. But again, yeah, a lot of young people play, so on Monday they'd be at school. So I'm going to say Saturday.
I'm going to say late Sunday night.
Sunday night.
Yeah.
Okay, so I only have granularity of the day, so I can't tell you like late or early.
Sure,
sure. You guys were really bad at this one.
it's like Wednesday.
Yeah. I bet Thursday.
Saturday is the lowest.
Oh, wow.
Sunday is the second lowest.
Because people are out and about.
They're not doing other things.
On the internet.
You guys did as bad as you possibly could. So the most popular is Friday.
Okay.
And then the next popular is Thursday. And Friday is twice as popular as Thursday.
Wow. Okay. So I guess... FNM should have something to do with it, I feel like, or just the idea that it's Friday, it's a magic day.
Yeah, it might be in preparation, though.
Yeah.
Yep.
That makes sense.
I think I do that, too. I think, you know, I'll have, like, a deck that's half-built, you know, that I've been working on over a couple weeks, and then I'm kind of motivated to finish it, you know, before FNM. So, I can kind of see that logic. And then Thursday, if I'm not a procrastinator, right? So, So it goes Friday, Thursday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday.
Oh, interesting. The pressure building up to that Friday, I feel
we
like.
We were horrible. Hey, Eli, let's read. No, just kidding.
Yeah. Just cut it all out.
Let's make us sound smart.
Well, now you guys know when we brew our decks is on the weekends.
I should have thought about that way. I don't think I've ever brewed a deck on a weekend. I'm too busy doing weekend stuff.
Yeah.
It's always like Wednesday night or something. Yeah, it makes sense.
But I think it says something about our hobby, right? It's it it says something like, man, we're thinking about this all week. And then it's almost like maybe it's not a hobby. Maybe it's something else. I don't know.
Yeah, it does mimic a work week sink. Schedule. Yeah, it's a money sink. Yeah, there you go. But it does kind of mimic the work week schedule where once we get closer to the weekend, we want to do it more. And then when the weekend comes, we find ourselves doing something else.
Or you're playing it.
Yep.
You know, that might be not the time that you're tuning those decks. It's like, no, that's why I tuned it, so I could play it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd be interested to see when the subreddit for EDH is the most busy. If it is, again, Thursday and Friday, or if it is the weekend.
Hmm. Yep. So... The one thing to note is that when a deck gets scraped off of the Reddit subreddit, you know, that's counting towards this count. And I see more deck help on Thursday and Friday in general on the subreddit as well.
It makes sense. People getting ready. You're about to go to battle. You got to suit up.
Yep.
So you mentioned some funny stories that you've had while working on the site, some bugs you've run into or certain cards that have caused trouble. I mean, like the dual-faced planeswalkers are going to.
Like any flip cards or any of the cards with like wear and tear and all that stuff.
Yeah, the bad one. So I actually haven't ever fixed the flip cards yet. So it's like I'm actually kind of lucky because I think flip cards just aren't played very much in general. So
yeah.
So it's like really not that.
The dual-faced cards, we mean, actually, yeah.
Yeah, or both dual face and flip. So they're bad for different reasons. So the dual face cards are bad because in the card database they show up as two cards.
Right.
So what happens is that people sometimes plug in the card on the backside, and it's kind of hard for me to tell like that this is actually the same card over here.
It's hard to sort of tie them together in the database.
Yeah. Yep. So sometimes you'll see recommendations for like the backside of Garruk, for example.
Garruk Relentless specifically. Yeah, that guy.
Yep. Sorry.
The one flip planeswalker.
Yep. And then you've got the flip cards too. That from Kamigawa, for example, also have two names as well, which is kind of annoying.
Right.
The other one too is the split cards.
Like
rough.
Wear and tear and stuff like that.
Yep. So the split cards, if you look up a split card on my website, it actually doesn't have the picture for it because the code actually fails when it tries to go pick up the image because there's actually two images associated with the same card. So there's all these kinds of problems with these cards that I just honestly haven't gotten around fixing yet, and I've been doing this for like a year now.
but like you said, they just don't get played that much, so it's not a huge deal.
Yep. The other thing that really is super annoying are... like fancy accents on cards, like you know, they add like a like an accent on top of an A or something like that,
or like Aether Snipe.
Oh my god, I the AE thing is just it makes me so mad. it's absolutely aggravating. The number of problems that are caused by that and the amount of time I've spent trying to fix that problem is astronomical because people type in AE. Sometimes people type in like the actual character AE, and then there's like actually different character. There's like lowercase and uppercase, and it's an absolute nightmare. It's an absolute nightmare.
I'm laughing because you know, if you don't, you'll just go crazy.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's pretty interesting. Well, you are going to have to figure out the dual face planeswalkers at the very least, because they're going to be integral to the site now.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that's going to be a pain in the butt.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm going to have special code for that. I had to add special code for the planeswalker commanders because originally my code just looked for all legendary creatures. So there's somewhere in my code where it's like all legendary creatures plus these five cards.
Right.
So it's just really obnoxious.
Yeah, just those small exceptions, and they're only going to get more as Magic keeps growing.
Yep.
So.
So the one kind of. Funny story that stands out for me where I almost fell out of my chair when I found it was the website was failing and I went in the logs and I couldn't figure out what it was. It was killing me. So I ended up pulling up all the deck lists for a particular commander. I think it was something really obscure. I don't even remember it, but it was only like 14 deck lists. And what happened was somebody was playing Little Girl.
Which has a half a...
Which has a...
Cost.
Yes.
Oh, so from Unhindered Unglued, right? Yeah.
And it has a converted mana cost of 0.5, which it screwed up my mana curve calculation. And it was just, when I found that, I was like, why did somebody put Little Girl in their deck and submit it to my website?
just to mess with EDHREC.com. Yeah. Yeah,
that's why Chibi Face finds his way in there, I'm sure.
Yeah, actually, those cards are super annoying as well, because they do show up and I can't really like filter them out. So, but luckily, not enough people play them that they actually show up in the recommendations.
Yeah, clearly, yeah. I don't think there's any unhinged outside of maybe if they're trying to specify that they have an unhinged island or a land in their deck specifically.
Some people
basics.
Do play them, and some people will like ask you if they can play them, and I'm usually fine with it. But yeah, it's not very often; it's rare.
Yeah.
Yep.
I just want Booster Tutor to be in every EDH deck, just so I have a reason to crack more packs.
Always looking for an excuse.
Okay, well, let's move on to the final sort of section for talking about EDH Rec, and let's just talk about criticism the site has received, because there is an interesting thread of debate that people may not necessarily like this kind of program, because it sort of recommends what people are criticizing it as for conformity. So net decking is a term that we use for when someone goes on the internet, finds a deck that they want to play in standard, modern, whatever, sees it top A to GP, and just copies the deck list.
Right. It's very common in competitive Magic. I think because EDH is a casual format that it can sometimes have a negative connotation. This is something you brought up, Donald. I don't know if you want to expand on it a little bit more.
Yeah,
is this something you've been confronted about?
Yeah, actually, so every now and then on Reddit, some posts will come up about EDHREC. It's usually something random like, hey, do you guys trust EDHREC's like generated decks, for example, was one that came up.
is it SpyNet?
Yeah, is it SpyNet? I get that comment all the time, actually.
Oh, that's hilarious.
The one thing that happens is like I post announcements to the EDH subreddit, because that was my original community and they always provide me really good feedback and they've always been really supportive. So I definitely shout out to those guys. I couldn't do it without them. And but every now, like, there's always like two or three guys that always show up to these threads, and some there's a couple of repeat offenders, and they always have like some sort of doom and gloom kind of like, you're going to kill the format, basically. And I think one of the big things that people are concerned about, actually, too, when I first started running the bot and people were like, well, what is this thing? People were really concerned about, like, hey, because before, when you built an EDH deck, like, there wasn't really any tool. Maybe on Gather, you would, like, search for cards, like, I'm building enchantment decks, so I'm going to search for enchantments and stuff, or you can look at other people's deck lists, but there wasn't really a good way. So, effectively, like, I mean, I use my own tool, and it pulls out the really obvious cards that I should obviously be playing. And so it really recommends a lot of the staples. When you look at it, you're like, there's no way I can't play this card because it's so good.
Right.
And so I think it definitely has conformity because it's so hard to be creative in EDH. It makes worse deck builders, honestly, with less knowledge of the pool, card pool, make better decisions, which I don't think is a bad thing.
Yeah, I agree. And it's like, hey, look, if you want a mana rock and you're like, oh, I don't know what to put in, and the thing's like Soul Ring, and you're like, oh, right, of course, that's not a bad conformity by any means.
Yep, I mean, yep, why? Yep. Yeah, I don't understand this at all, because people can already find the cards. You're just making it easier.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like it was impossible to find them before and now they're findable. It wasn't binary. So it's just like, don't we want to just make things easier? It's still, people are still making choices.
It's just
you're giving them the choices in a more convenient manner.
Yeah, and again, it's like, this is the utility that you can use to however you decide. So if you want to use it in a way that just makes you make the most vanilla version of a deck possible, you only use the recommendations, then that's your decision and not the bot influencing that to you. The bot's just telling you what the information that it has and what it's collated. So
yeah, that's really weird. It's interesting, because when I go to EDHREC and I look at almost a lot of my decks have nothing, like if I look at a Riku deck, well, my Riku deck is a Prodigal Sorcerer, it's a Tim deck.
Yeah.
So none of the recommendations matter to me. When I go to a Chromat deck or Nekusar, it's totally different, because if I go to Nekusar, well, it's missing two colors that I'm using.
Yeah,
if I go to Chromat, they didn't build a Nekusar deck, That's just like, I've made choices. The EDHREC doesn't force me to do anything, so I don't understand this argument at all.
Yeah. Well, I think it really comes down to the more novice players, where they're plugging in a deck list, and I don't think they're knowledgeable enough about the pool to come up with something interesting. To be honest, like, hey, oh, I really thought to make a five-color Nekazar deck. I mean, people probably don't think about that off the bat, right? So
right.
I think that's kind of maybe what's going on. So it, actually, one example, if you go to the a commander page for a commander on my website and you click on the generate a deck list, it basically creates like a deck list out of the 100 most popular cards for that commander.
Mm-hmm.
And you can like literally copy and paste that into Tapped Out or MTGO or something.
And it'll
like that.
Be a really good deck, probably.
It's like pretty decent. It's really not bad. I think some really people cool. have been... Yeah, some people have been kind of creeped out by that a little bit, because and I do know that there's people basically on MTGO in particular that are like, oh, I feel like playing, Ashling today. I'm going to go copy and paste this deck list and get started within 5 minutes. Which is that a bad thing? I mean,
it's great. A bad thing. It's great.
Yeah,
thing.
Why not? Yeah.
What an amazing way to get someone an easy way to just play a deck and then find out what they like, don't like about it, and then make their own decisions from there. And if you are a novice player. What a great way to take that pressure off for the first deck you make.
Yes, exactly. And I think also, like, there's this evolution that happens in all novice players go through it, which, like, they start out, they don't know a lot of cards, they're learning the format, they don't know how to build a deck. And then, you know, somewhere along the way, two or three steps down, they end up building, like, a super powerful, crazy, mean EDH deck, because that's the point at which they sort of start to understand cards. And they understand interactions, and then they just build the most highly tuned thing, and they Google like most powerful. This is where they build their Narset deck, you know. And then and then they realize, oh, that's not actually that fun, because that deck just does crazy broken things super fast, and it does the same thing every time. And then they actually evolve from there. And so what you're doing is just speeding up that evolution to that point.
Yeah.
But everyone's going to go through that anyway, so there's no problem with a newer player building a really powerful deck because they have tools available to them, because they're going to do that anyway.
Yeah.
You know, you see almost every player build that deck, you know, somewhere around their sophomore area of learning to play.
Yeah. Just the busted deck that they want to have that powerful deck that just wins or whatever.
Yeah, exactly. Cause you're the new player and you're getting kicked around for a while, and then you start to understand cards and synergy and stuff. And then you start to really brew, and then you start to Google things like most broken EDH commander. I mean, it's not that hard to do it once you have that aim. And I don't know. I'm going to say that all the naysayers are kind of crazy.
One thing in particular to the Reddit bot, which posts, if for the listeners that haven't seen it, on the Reddit bot, when somebody posts a link, it responds to that link with recommendations, like in line in the comment.
Right.
There's been a couple of people in the subreddit that say that it kills conversation because, my bot is responding and my recommendations are, I actually take it as a compliment, are so good that people don't need to respond in the thread.
Interesting. I feel like that's a great way to kickstart a conversation. Do you agree / disagree? You know.
Yep. This actually goes all the way back to what my initial motivation was. This was, I was sitting on the EDH subreddit, and there was people posting like deck lists that were like missing Sol Ring, for example. Like, and I'm typing out, "Hey, you should probably play Sol Ring." I mean, what a waste of time, right? So instead, what I wrote was a program that did the obvious thing so that we could conversation wise talk about like maybe the more interesting choices versus, you know, like making sure that people are playing Sol Ring and enough mana rocks.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's so true.
That's a great point.
Yep.
Awesome.
Very cool, man. This site is really cool. I was not super familiar with it before you reached out to us, so I'm glad that you did. Glad we could highlight it. If you haven't checked out edhrec.com, definitely a very useful tool for all your deck brewing needs. And it's just interesting to click around and look at the data too, and just see what is popular, what a lot of people are playing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So,
and John, where can we find you online if someone wants to give you recommendations or ask a question about statistics on the bot?
Yep. So I think typically people send me messages on my Reddit handle, which is just EDHREC. It seems like people, you know, hit me there a lot. The other thing, too, is that there's a link to an email address at the bottom of edhrec.com that you can email me at. It's edhrec@minorkosh.com. Minorkosh is the company I work for.
Oh, cool.
And then I'm also on Twitter, Donald P.
Nice. Minor. And we will have all those links as well for you guys in the show notes. This is fascinating. I really love that it's a, you know, this is a player generated act of love for the game sort of thing that Wizards would never kind of just do on their own unless they had, you know, some kind of upstart person there that wanted to do this specifically, because it requires such a specific skill set. And I'd like to thank you, Donald, for putting all the time into this and also making the website as well as the bot. So yeah, I think it's definitely great for the community. It's great for just aspiring deck builders and stuff, and it kickstarts conversation, which is, we couldn't ask for anything more. Awesome.
All right, so time to move on to the end step, where we talk about something cool outside of the world of Magic. Don, I understand you got something new that's cool.
Yeah, so I've been playing a lot with this Big Green Egg thing, which is this kind of fancy ceramic grill.
Ceramic grill? Oh, cool.
How's it work exactly?
So it's kind of like a smoker, I guess. So it's pretty straightforward. You put charcoal in it, you set the charcoal on fire, and then you put food in it, and then you close it, and then it grills some stuff.
Oh, yeah. I'm looking at pictures of it right now. It looks delicious. Like, what kind of stuff?
Yeah, but the thing that's really cool about it versus other charcoal grills is that it's really good at holding the temperature at a low temperature, which is, I guess, hard to do on a normal grill. So you can keep the grill at like a 200 degrees, 215, and cook ribs over the course of like 7 or 8 hours. And get.
Oh, I bet they're good.
Yep. So I've been doing that a lot, outside of Magic and work.
And, where do you live, Don?
I live in Maryland.
Okay. So next time I'm in Maryland, I'm having some ribs, right?
yep.
That's awesome. And hey, you know, we're recording this before July 4th, and we'll release the episode after, but I'm assuming you've got some tasty July 4th plans.
Oh man, I bet there's going to be something awesome coming out of that thing.
I'm going to try chicken, like a whole chicken. I haven't tried it yet, and I'm kind of scared because chicken's really thick. So,
chicken's scary to cook that way.
Yeah. I'm kind of nervous about it.
Because if you undercook like beef, you're probably okay if you undercook a little. If you undercook chicken, it's just not good at all.
Hey, undercooking's not that bad. You just throw it back on. But
that's a good point. That's
true. Like, I'm far more worried about overcooking. I actually overcooked. I'm starting to realize how into cooking I am. I never quite realized until talking about it. But I bought like $200 in lobster and I overcooked all of it. Yeah,
Maryland is a good place to get lobster, though, that's for sure.
Yeah, they're actually shipped from Maine, like fresh shipped from Maine.
That sounds so good.
Yeah, it was not
hungry.
Yeah,
it's not good to overcook it, though.
Yeah, you're gonna get some squishy lobster, right?
No, it's actually really. It turns into rubber.
Yeah, rubbery.
The the trick I always learned was you pull on one of the antennas, and if it just pops right off, then it's done.
Oh man! All right, I'll try that.
I've steamed or boiled them, so I have not put them into a. Did you put them in your smoker thing?
No. These are boiled. I'm probably not gonna try to cook lobster again.
It is a challenge and an investment in case you don't do it right. Excellent. So you guys can find out more about the Big Green Egg just by looking up the Big Green Egg.
I'm not getting paid. I'm not getting paid for that.
Don't worry.
This was not a sponsor.
The next time you use EDH Rec, it's going to just recommend the Big Green Egg. It's like, wait, what the? This isn't a card.
All right. Be sure to check out the Masters of Modern, our sister podcast with Alex Kessler and Ben Bateman. You can find them on rocketjump.com. You can also find them on Twitter at TheMMCast.
Our editor for the show is Eli Cuevas, and special thanks to Jeffrey Palmer for the living card animations on our videos. Yes, we have videos. You can find them on YouTube, and you can find Jeffrey Palmer at LivingCardsMTG. Don, thanks so much again for coming on the show. It was a pleasure.
Yeah. Thanks for having the podcast. I really enjoyed it.
Oh, great. That's always awesome to hear.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
And we'll see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.